In this episode, I continue my exploration of what we can do to help horses when they're being mistreated. Helping to improve horse welfare isn't just about taking action in the worst cases. It's about bringing awareness to the smaller moments in a way that creates real change. So here we go, episode 252, What to Do When You See Mistreatment. Hi, I'm Karen Rolfe, and welcome to Horse Training in Harmony. This podcast is about you making progress with your horse in a way that you both can love. It's about learning how to move and be in harmony. Because yes, you really can develop a horse to be both athletic and happy. When we show up as our best selves for our horses will show up for us. So, let's get started. Well, I am sitting here all bundled up in my big fluffy bathrobe that I rarely put on because I live in Florida. But it's cold. We got down into the hard freeze kind of temperatures last night, and then it was windy and cold all day. And I know, there's lots of you listening from places in the world where, like, this would be considered a warm day. But hey, we're not used to it down here in Florida. And I have to turn the heater off when I record the podcast because otherwise it fires up and you guys hear the rumbling in the background. So I'm sitting here in my uncomfortable podcast chair because the comfortable one squeaks when I move and I'm very fidgety. And I'm all wrapped up in this bathrobe because it's cold. Anyway, not looking for sympathy. Just thought I'd share the situation here. It was actually so chilly today that I did something I rarely do, which is I came in early from my sacred horse time. Oh, I know, shocking. But yeah, it was just cold and it was windy. So I went out, I fed them, took care of them, tended to them, did the little horse health issues that I needed to, and I sort of stood around, and I was like, you know, I think I'm just going to go back in the house, and had plenty to work on, so that's what I did, and now I'm here talking to you, so just to set the scene for you. Now, I know it's been a couple weeks since my last episode. After doing all the audiobook recordings, that was a lot. So I gave myself a little vacation from the podcast and from talking to you guys. So anyway, I missed you though, and it's good to be back. So in this episode, I'm going to talk more about the horse welfare issue. I know we've had a lot of focus on this, but you know, it's important. And I'm really fascinated by it. I feel a big responsibility to be thinking about this with horses because as much as I live in my beautiful little bubble on my property and my beautiful little bubble of the kind of students that I work with in person and where I go, I can be under the illusion that every horse has the most magnificent life possible. But the reality is that's not true. And when I do go out into the world, usually at a competition grounds or something like that, it's, you know, you see a lot of people who love their horses and you see a lot of people taking good care of their horses. And then you see a lot of situations that are sort of on that edge. And so it's kind of easy to think about the dramatic cases, right? Here in Ocala, just in the past week, there was a video that went around of a person, a trainer, on the ground holding this horse and just really, I'm not going to describe it, but abusing this horse quite dramatically. And he was just arrested, right? So this stuff is happening. It's happening all around us. And, you know, he was doing this to this horse in the daytime and somebody was recording. And I don't know how many other people were around. So it was good it was recorded. It was good it was reported. And something happened with it. So that's good news. But every time I see a case like that, I'm left thinking, you know, there were probably warning signs. There were probably lesser offenses there were, you know, how do we move through our little horse world life so that we don't get to that point? And it's going to take all of us and seeing all the opportunities where we can be anything from just a shining example, quietly going about our own business, but exemplifying, you know, respect for the horses, all the way to, you know, the people that come and arrest these people. But there's a lot in between. And most of reality lives in between. It's in the daily moments. And I'm really interested in the edges, in life, in horse training, in everything, right? There's these, if it's on a sliding scale, there's these edge points when we're just starting to tip over towards a tendency that could, if accelerated or amplified or more energy was put into it, be abusive. Right. And so, and that's where it's tricky, because sometimes those are like, oh, it's not so bad. Oh, they just cursed at their horse or whatever it is. It's these subtle edges. And I think that's a really important thing, because that's where things get normalized, right? Just a little bit of this and a little bit of that again. And now we're getting used to it. No, that's just how they act. It's never too bad. Right. So I think that's what I keep thinking about. And I keep thinking about, what can we do? And is there a way to take some sort of action that feels safe for everybody and that could be helpful, right? So we want to be safe and we want to be... I did an earlier episode, episode 228, that explored this also. And it explored a few different ways to look at horse welfare. And it took into account the intentions, right? Because sometimes horses are hurt through very good-hearted, well-meaning people that just made a mistake or didn't know or weren't, you know, were trying, but they failed through no fault of their own, except that they, you know, they're not good at it yet. So take a look at that episode, 228. I wrote a couple blogs, and in episode 228, I kind of go into that. So I look at the several different ways to look at the horse welfare scale. And I also look at some reasons why, behaviorally, from a psychological point of view, why we humans sometimes don't act and don't speak up in the moment. And I talk about some experiments that were done with, a situation where, like, there's smoke pouring into the room through a vent, and all the people in the room are actors, except for one that they're testing, and the one that they're testing would see the smoke, look around, see that nobody else was responding to the smoke, and then just kind of not respond. And the vast majority of people stayed there until, if it was real smoke, everybody would have died. And there was only, like, one person that was like, hey, doesn't anybody see the smoke? We need to get out of here. So we're really fighting often our neurology. We're fighting our social pressures to not stand out, not go against the grain. And this ultimately can hurt the horses. Now, on the other hand, we want to make sure, I'm sure we've all seen the, you know, righteous indignation overreactions on Facebook. You know, there's a picture of a horse and one ear is turned back, and someone will pipe up and just condemn and be like, clearly that horse is miserable and you're a horrible person, and, you know, that kind of over the top. So we're having to deal with that also. And so somewhere in the middle is this place where we can take real actions that will actually make a difference. I mean, we all have a role to play in helping horses have the best situation. And one of the most difficult things is to do something in the moment. So how do we speak up without making it worse, without putting ourselves in danger? And I think it's a good idea to think about this ahead of time, so that when we're in that moment and we need to do something, we can be courageous and helpful instead of being frozen and then leaving the situation only to later agonize about what we could have done. I mean, this is all easier said than done, but with a few guidelines, we can be more confident about when it's better to speak up, how to speak up, and when it's actually better to walk away and then report it. So then I did something that I don't usually do, and I'm a little bit resistant to doing it, but, you know, I was just Googling and playing, and I thought, well, let me see what happens if I ask AI. So I asked AI a few questions, and then they answered, and it answered. And then I asked some different questions, and I kept prompting it to give me a helpful guide. And so I took those answers, and then I made it my own, curated the parts that I thought resonated with me, kept the parts that I thought were helpful. And I think it is pretty helpful. So that's what I want to share with you today. And so I created a list of or guidelines about when is it best to speak up, when is it best to report, how to report responsibly, how to speak up and report, and when to do that. And then there's this thing called speaking into the field, which I thought was actually a really powerful technique. So silence enables abuse. We want to speak up when we see mistreatment. We want to do it in a really calm, respectful manner. Because a calm, respectful confrontation can interrupt harm and it can plant doubt in what they're doing. We can also report abuse or neglect, and we can do that by using local animal welfare organizations or authorities when necessary. We can also advocate for welfare standards, so making sure that we support regulations that limit overworking of horses, cruel equipment, poor living conditions, etc. And we want to make sure that we're using our voice online responsibly, that we can share information without shaming. And this is what's tricky and what I see so much happening online, because shame actually hardens resistance. It makes people get defensive. And then it can have the opposite effect. It just deepens them more and they go more into their own little bubble. So I asked about when speaking up is usually best. So speaking up is most effective when education or stress reduction can actually alter the outcome. So some typical scenarios for this would be a rider or trainer or handler who's feeling frustrated and they're losing patience. This is a huge one. This happens a lot, and it's sort of the gateway, right? That's often the first time we can see it. And even a really, really talented, heartfelt person can have bad days, right? So that would be a very typical scenario. Frustrated rider, handler, and losing their patience and emotional fitness. It could also be a situation where there's poor technique being used, and it's a technique that's rooted in tradition, not malice, right? So it's someone doing something not because they have an attitude of cruelness towards the horse. It's just the, quote, the way things are done. Or it could be like a one-off escalation, right? It's a really bad day, very out of character, but like, oh my gosh, what's happening? Another scenario where speaking up is best is if you have a relationship with the person, or you've been sharing some sort of space, right? So there's some familiarity, whether you're in the same barn or lesson program, etc. And speaking up will help in these situations, because often the person doing it might not really realize. They might not realize how it looks. Now, how it looks is less important than the actual impact it's having, but they might not be able to see beyond themselves, right? If it's a frustrated person or a person losing their emotional fitness, they probably can't see themselves. They're stuck in their heads or their emotions, and they're not taking the outside view. And so this kind of stress impairs their judgment. They're not bad people. They might not be thinking horrible thoughts about their horse, but they're stressed, and it's impairing their normal judgment. And this is where a calm interruption can reset the situation, right? And so the goal here to speak up in these scenarios would be to just interrupt it, to reduce harm, and to plant awareness. And the goal is not to win. It's not to be righteous. It's not to be, you know, a hero in front of everybody else and to shame the person. It's just to interrupt, to reduce harm, to plant awareness. So if you can think of those situations, you're at the school, it's a trainer you know, they're normally pretty good. Or let's not even say trainer, let's just say another peer that's there. And they're just losing their patience, or they're just doing something. You know, if they're losing patience or feeling stressed out or frustrated, you know, sometimes just coming along and going, you know, hey, we're taking a lunch order, you know. I mean, just literally interrupting it can be enough to give someone just a minute to take a breath. Or, you know, just go up and be like, hey, you know, is everything okay? You know, depending on the relationship. So remember the goal to interrupt, reduce harm, plant awareness. It's when you feel like you can educate or stress reduce the situation, right? So if it's a technique being done out of tradition, not malice, then you can presume that that person cares and they're just trying to do the right thing. And if you can approach it in a very helpful way, if you can sort of identify what they're trying to do with their horse, and maybe there's an option that you can give them, like, hey, you know, I see you're trying to do this. This looks like things are getting a little confused. You know, have you tried, you know, can I just show you this? And you ask permission, and you just really, I think a lot of times just having that conversation and letting people know you're there to help is going to be the way in. So for those situations, you know, I think we can all picture that sort of moment. It might be good to have a few one-liners up your sleeve, a few ideas of how you might interrupt, especially if it's something that you've seen happening before or tending in that direction. And then you already know your relationship with that person, you know their personality, you know what would be an appropriate, normal kind of thing to come up and say to that person where you don't cause them to get defensive. But again, you go in with the intention of just interrupting and being a calm voice. You might not even talk about whatever's happening with the horse. Like literally, you could just say, hey, we're running down the street to the deli. Do you want anything? And just giving a moment to breathe and be present with that person. And just be, you know, they might start the conversation of going, you know, no, I don't need lunch, but God, I'm just so confused by, I don't know why my horse is acting like this. And now you're in a conversation about it because you've stepped up as being somebody who's not judging them, but you're there for them. All right. So that would be the intention of that. And now, AI and I thought about when reporting is the better option. So reporting is going to be necessary when the harm is serious, when it's ongoing, when it's dangerous, right? So clear situations where you want to report would be physical violence, hitting, whipping, excessively beating, severe neglect, emaciation, lack of water, untreated wounds, stuff like that, chronic abuse. You know, it's a repeated incidences over time. Incidents. I'm forgetting how to speak English. Anyway, other clear reporting situations are situations where speaking up has failed or it's made things worse. So picture the first scenario, maybe decide, you know, someone's getting a little rough with their horse. You go and decide to like, hey, we're going out to lunch. You need anything? And maybe you've tried that a couple times and now they get mad when you come up and speak to them. Like it's getting worse. And now they're even more frustrated because you interrupted them and they're going to take that frustration out on the horse. So if you see any signs of that, then you don't want to keep putting yourself in that situation and you want to report because now it's a chronic, it's a thing. Also, reporting is a better option if the abuser holds power over you, right? So there's power dynamics, and I think it would be often challenging for a student or a working student to go approach, you know, the trainer or the owner of the facility or something like that. And especially if they are the type, if they are physically dangerous people, and they would take great offense to someone quote unquote lower than them saying something, then you risk putting yourself in a position where you could be punished. So reporting is sometimes the only ethical option. If speaking up could escalate the abuse later out of sight, right? So you say something and they're like, oh shoot, you know, they saw me. So next time they'll do it where you can't see them. Reporting is sometimes the only ethical option if the horse cannot leave. You know, if you can't, for some reason, you can't remove the horse can't get away. And if the patterns aren't changing without outside intervention, right? It's clear that it becomes a pattern with this person. You can see where it's going, it's continuing, or it's getting worse, and you don't feel safe. So that's when you have to report. And just to keep in mind, because sometimes that can feel like a big step, right? To get, you know, nobody likes to be the tattletale. So sometimes there can be some hesitation. But just remember that reporting is not overreacting. And this belief keeps the abuse hidden. And so it's a little bit like the story I just told you with the smoke coming in through the vent and the person looking around and say, well, nobody else is saying anything about this, so I guess it's okay. And unfortunately, this just happens a lot. Things get normalized. We're all looking to each other for like what's okay. And you might have a barn full of people all agreeing that what this person does is abusive, but they're all looking at each other and go, well, she's not doing anything about it. So reporting something is actually a request for assessment, right? You're asking somebody else to like, hey, I need your help. I want to report this because I want somebody else to assess the situation. It's a chance for an intervention. And often when you report, you know, there's some education before there's punishment. So we just want to do something in a way that won't create more harm for you or the horse. So most animal welfare agencies will aim to correct, not immediately penalize, but it will now be in process. So how to report responsibly without making things worse? And the advice from AI, and I agree, would be number one, to document, but don't confront. All right, so again, if you feel like it's too dangerous to say anything and the better choice is to report, then just document it, right? So the videos we all know can be really helpful. Write down dates, times, locations, if it happens a lot. Be really specific in documenting the behaviors. You know, it's not using emotional language, but just write down what happened. He did this, he did that, she did this, she did that. So it's not open to interpretation, just the facts. And again, the photos or videos, if it's safe and if it's legal, right? So there's different laws around videotaping people. I'm not a lawyer, so consult that, but again, good to document it, even if it's just for your own reference so that you can more accurately describe. But we've all seen how important those videos are. And then you want to use appropriate channels, right? So depending on where you are and what's around you, you know, animal control, humane society, equine welfare organizations, barn management, right? If you're in a barn that cares, sometimes the barn management or ownership, and then governing bodies for sports. You know, what's the organization of the discipline that that person is in, especially if they're a competitor. And so, right, so you want to be factual. So instead of saying they are abusing their horse, because everybody has a different definition of what abuse is, you could say the horse appears, you know, underweight, visible ribs, no access to water over multiple days. There's wounds on his leg that we have not seen being treated, you know, or you can again say they were holding the horse, you know, by the reins. They had a, you know, 2x4 in their hand that, you know, I don't want to describe it. You know what I mean? So just the people on the other end that you're reporting to are going to want to get a clear picture. And if, you know, if you say they're being cruel or they're beating the horse, it's like, be specific, because everybody's definition is a little different and they really do want to know. Now, there's a middle option, and that's strategic speaking up. So sometimes it's a little bit of both. There's some speaking up in the moment, and then there's reporting also, right? So you can speak up in the moment to stop the harm and report later if the pattern continues, or, you know, even if that one incident was bad enough. So you can video, you can report, and if you feel safe enough, you can also just stand up and go, hey, that's not okay, and I'm going to report you, right? So, or whatever, you know, you feel is safe, right? So you just because you're videoing it and you're going to report it doesn't mean that if it feels appropriate to say something, you know, even if it's just, you know, shouting out into the you know, one thing, you don't have to go in there and get nose to nose and have a confrontation, but just to say something. You can speak to the supervisor, the barn manager, instead of the individual, right? And you can also ask a vet or another trainer to help you intervene. This also helps spread the responsibility and reduce the risk. Like if it's a horse that's having untreated wounds and stuff, you could say, you know, let's ask a vet. Could you just look at this? Am I crazy or is this, you know? And so now you've got, it's not just you. Now, when to not speak up directly would be, again, if the person is volatile or aggressive, and if they're doing it with a horse, then you want to be careful. If you're a minor, and especially if you're a minor and the person is in authority, if you're isolated, if you're the only other one at the barn, right, or outnumbered, maybe there's a whole trainer's team and they're all like that because they all learn from this person and you're the only one. You know, you might not want to put yourself in that position, speaking up directly. And if the abuse is really clearly intentional and severe. So in the beginning, I talked about, you know, maybe a method that's on the crueler side, the more harmful side, but it's being done by tradition, not malice, right? The person's just like, well, doesn't everybody put their draw reins this tight? I thought I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. There's a huge difference between that and somebody who knows better and is intentionally putting the horse in a situation for the sake of harming it and punishing it and things like that. So the intention does matter, and you want to kind of feel into the intention, because somebody who is being intentionally and severely abusive is not somebody you're probably going to want to go speak up directly to, unless you're, you know, that kind of person that feels like you can, but I don't think that would be me. So in those kind of cases, silence in the moment and reporting it later is not being a coward. it's being smart. So one way to kind of have a little guide to making your decisions, you can ask yourself, is the harm immediate? Ask yourself if you can safely interrupt this, and ask yourself, will this likely reduce harm? And if the answer to either of those is no, no, I can't safely interrupt this, and it's likely to not reduce the harm, meaning the person might get more angered by it, then you definitely just want to report. Right? And then you can ask, okay, who can, is there somebody who could intervene? If it's not you, is there somebody that you can go to that could intervene in that moment? And then you're definitely going to report. And so again, another reframe is just to make sure you're not worried about getting someone in trouble. You're standing for a voiceless being. You're asking society to uphold basic care standards. And by reporting, you're acting from responsibility, not judgment. And you want to make sure you're acting from responsibility, not judgment. You want to help the horse more than you want to condemn the human. It's a bad behavior, not necessarily a bad human, although there's some humans that have a lot of bad behaviors. That's another subject. But just know that reporting, you know, it can take courage. And so, but again, hopefully this can help you be thoughtful about it and be more sure about when you might want to do that. And then AI really, it brought up this next subject, which I thought was sort of lovely. And it brought up the emotional aftercare, which is so often overlooked. And, you know, brought up how witnessing abuse and cruelty can be so upsetting. And you want to make sure that if you're seeing this, that you make sure to talk to somebody about it, someone that you trust. You know, you can write down what you saw, that can help you process and also remember. And to remind yourself that whatever action you took, that you did what you could without causing more harm. So whatever it is, you know, if it could be enough. Often we're left feeling like whatever we do isn't enough, but just, you know, you're one step closer, right? So if you saw it, you acknowledged it, you thought maybe you should do something you didn't, but then afterwards you talk to somebody and you help process that. Now you're one step closer to maybe becoming more helpful next time. And again, it might have been a situation that you couldn't intervene. So it matters that you care and make sure to take care of yourself from those situations. I think the worst thing we can do is witness those situations, feel bad about the situations, and then because we feel bad, we kind of wall off and we don't want to think about it anymore. And then when we see that situation again, we'll tend to hide from it instead of going, okay, what could I do? How can I help? And then it talked about it, AI. Ugh, I can't believe I used AI. But anyway, AI and I together. I think it was kind of cool. So they talked about this idea of speaking into the field and not at a person necessarily. And I thought that was kind of interesting. Did you know that now there's an audio version of the Dressage Naturally book? This is the book that sparked a movement. It's called Dressage Naturally Results in Harmony. It's read by me, but it isn't just a narrated version of the original text. I've added fresh commentary, new insights, behind-the-scenes stories, and I talk about how Dressage Naturally has evolved since the book first came out in 2007. I'm putting the audiobook in a podcast format, so if you love this Horse Training in Harmony podcast, and I think you do, I know you'll love the audiobook. Think of it as the book plus the conversations we would have over coffee at the barn. It has everything you love about audiobooks with the intimacy and personality of a podcast. In addition to the full book content, you'll hear my updated perspectives on the evolution of dressage naturally, nuances I couldn't fully convey in print, expanded explanations to help you apply the concepts more easily, stories about the horses that helped me create the system, and personal insights about the creation of Dressage Naturally, and so much more. Now, the Dressage Naturally print book has illustrations, and it comes with 3+ hours of companion video. So we made 2 options for you to get the audiobook. If you're a visual learner, you can get the audiobook plus commentary, plus companion videos, plus a PDF of the illustrations from the book. Plus, we'll give you a code to get the print book at 70% off. Or, if you already have the print book and video set, you can get just the audiobook plus the bonus commentary. Either way, you'll get a unique link to this private podcast, and then you can add it to your favorite podcast app where it'll live there forever. So it's not a subscription, it's a one-time purchase. So go to dressagenaturally.net/audiobook. I hope you're as excited about this as I am. You can go to dressagenaturally.net/audiobook, and I'll leave the link to that in the show notes also. All right, now back to the pod. And this was for situations where, I think this is a really common situation. So let's say you are at a horse show and you're in the warm-up arena, or your student or friend is in the warm-up arena riding. So you're watching and there's another trainer riding a student's horse in the warm-up arena, and the students and some, you know, the owner of the horse and some other students of that trainer are hanging around. And let's say that the ride that trainer is having on the horse is not so pleasant, and it's starting to cross over into, this really is not a good deal for the horse. One of those edges, right? It's not really abuse, but it's not very nice either. So they talk about speaking to the field, which is where you're not talking to a person, you're just saying something into the space. And they gave a couple different, you know, ways to do this. So the first way would be just to say it, quote, to yourself. Like you're saying it under your breath, or you're saying it just to yourself. And they said that that was kind of too quiet, too internal. It's too easy to miss. It can sound like muttering if you're overheard. And I guess the whole point of saying something out loud is so someone hears it, but it'll just come off like muttering, and it kind of misses the social signal. So it doesn't reliably plant seeds. Now, the other thing you could do if you're speaking into the field is you could say it to the trainer on that horse as they go by. You know, you're like, bleh, you're riding like crap. Anyway, that would be too confrontational, and it will trigger hierarchy and ego. It'll increase the likelihood of escalation, and often the trainer might even double down because the students are watching, and this will often backfire in warm-up arenas. I actually just remembered, I have a story. I was standing next to a warm-up arena at a show, and just watching. There were a lot of top professionals there, and I was there with a friend, and I was telling a story. I don't even remember what the story is about, but in the story was a mention of long spurs. Now, I don't even remember what the story was, but it wasn't about abuse. It wasn't about anything. It was just like a story about these long spurs. And a trainer rode by and then just stopped. And she gave me this huge lecture about how, you know, her spurs are long, but she's very refined, and the horse, and she's giving, and I'm just looking at her like, what are you doing? Like, she just, as she rode by, she just overheard part of a story, and heard the words long spurs come out and assumed it was about her and that I was criticizing her. Now, I hadn't even been watching her. So it was just interesting. I'm like, huh, Why might you think that I would be thinking that you're being cruel with your spurs? But I was just so dumbfounded at the time. So anyway, that would be an example of why you might not want to speak into the space about a trainer doing something, because yeah, if they're anything like this one, they're gonna double down, they're gonna defend themselves. I mean, she got so defensive, and I literally was not even looking at her. Anyway, so another way of speaking into the space would be saying it into a shared space that's audible to the nearby students, that's not confrontational, that sounds reflective but not corrective, and it allows everyone to kind of save face, right? It doesn't create the defensiveness. And that would be the intention of saying something like that. So what speaking into the space could actually look like, that you would have neutral body orientation. So you're not like squared off to the trainer. You're just hanging out by the rail. You're not like focus pointing. And you have some volume, but it's soft. So soft volume, clear, but not like loud and, you know, aggressive. It's more of a calm, reflective tone. You're not making direct eye contact with the trainer or necessarily anyone. And you'll say it and then just pause. And then you might move away or redirect your attention to something else. So it's should feel like a thoughtful observation, not an intervention, and not like you're expecting any kind of response or explanation or anything like that. So an example. I'm sure everybody's thinking like, can you give me an example? So let's say you're standing near the rail. The trainer is wrestling with their horse and saying something like, oh, he's being so rude today. And then you might sort of be looking at the horse, not up at the trainer's eyes. And you're just kind of saying like, gosh, that looks like stress so much more than misbehavior. And then you just stop talking. You might step back. You don't explain. You don't wait for a response. Say it so the students hear it. Say it so the trainer hears it. So you can do it without shouting. No one is directly challenged. And then, you know, you can like tie your shoes or talk to your friend or change the subject or, you know, not be standing there looking like you're waiting for an explanation. I think the tricky part with this is to monitor your tone, that it doesn't come off snarky or righteous or whatever. So that's the part that I think is the hard part, is not to have the tone of voice, right? So you're just kind of like reflexively like, oh my gosh, he looks so much, you know, it looks like stress so much more than rudeness. And, you know, so that it's hearable, but almost like you're not engaging in a conversation about it. And so here's why AI said that this would work psychologically. It's so the students are allowed to consider the idea, right? So they weren't instructed, they weren't told, they weren't judged. It was just something put out into the ethos, right? The students are allowed now to consider the idea. They weren't being told anything. The trainer can ignore it without losing face, right? The trainer could be in that situation and pretend that they never even heard it said, right? So that it's not, again, it's not confrontational. The students shouldn't be looking at the trainer and then looking at you going, ooh, what's going to happen next? Should be so non-confrontational. And now also the horse is the reference point, right? So the trainer's like, oh, he's being so rude. And you're not looking at the trainer going, you're a cruel trainer. You're looking at the horse and you're kind of looking like, huh, gosh, the horse looks a little confused, or gosh, the horse kind of looks tired more than rude or whatever it is that you say. So you're sort of pointing people to observe now the horse. The horse is the reference point. And the comment can sound like experience, not criticism, if you do it with the right tone of voice. So the idea is to subtly shift the social narrative. And I think I talked about this in the other episode, 228, you know, again, we're thinking about what can we say. And I think I even mentioned it in that of like the power of just going, just saying to the space of like, gosh, that, you know, that horse looks so stressed, you know, just saying that thing out loud. It's a way to not, you know, not confront, not create defensiveness, just say out loud, be the person that's like, hey, there's smoke coming through the vent. Like, I'm just seeing this thing, and let's consider this thing that we're seeing. So an important safety note. If you are a minor, if you are alone, if you're in a really tense or aggressive environmental situation there, then default to speaking only to the students later, or say nothing and then document or report it. So wisdom includes self-protection. So again, with a feeling out the environment, like in that situation, example with the warm-up arena, you could kind of keep track and see if, you know, if it seems like, you know, maybe the student is looking at the trainer riding the horse and the horse is being called rude, you might, you know, find that student later and just say something like, gosh, you know, your horse looks so sweet. He looks like he was really trying, you know, just something like that. It doesn't even have to be like, hey, I think your trainer is blah, blah, blah. You can say, gosh, I was watching and, you know, that horse looked, he looks like he's really trying, you know, that, you know, sometimes it's so hard to watch when they're not having a good ride with their trainer. But, you know, just, again, be a person that can be open to without being righteous, without shaming, without telling them that they're idiots for being with that trainer. Just plant the seed and get them thinking. And there's so much power in this. And so when you're doing this, your inner orientation, which has such a huge effect, is, you know, before you say this thing, remember, you're modeling how to see the horse. You're not saying, that person's wrong, I need that to change, I need that to stop. You're modeling how to see the horse. God, that horse looks tired. That horse looks really stressed. That horse looks really confused. God, it looks like he's really trying to do the right thing. I think he doesn't know what to do. It's things like that. And I really, well, we know, you guys know, if you work with horses in a way that you want relationship and partnership, you know they can read intention. You know intention is readable. And so when you decide to say something, if it's appropriate, to just take that second in yourself and think, you're not here to fight, you're not here to argue, you're not here to shame, you're not here to create defensiveness, you're here to help, and you're here to model how to see the horse. So when you're speaking to the space, you're not muttering to yourself under your breath, you're not confronting the trainer, you're just speaking calmly into the shared space. What you're saying is aimed primarily at the students and the bystanders. And it's designed to plant a seed, not to win a point. And if you're doing this with care and integrity, that's what matters probably more than you realize. I hope this helps somebody, and I hope it helps a horse. And go out and love your horses. Let me know how it goes. Bye. If this episode resonates with you, make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Training horses is a long game. The more you listen, the more pieces of the puzzle you'll have. To see all your learning resources, visit dressagenaturally.net. That's where you'll find free videos, online courses, my book. You can sign up for my Wednesday Wisdom email, or even book a private consult. Most of all, remember, you got this. Never underestimate the possibility for things to improve in ways you cannot yet imagine. Till next time, love your horse, move in harmony, and enjoy the process.